Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here on the main feed. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Sondra. It's Friday evening here in the UK, Friday afternoon in the US. How are you today, Sondra?
I'm okay. Yeah, it's holiday time, so, you know, that's great. There are Christmas trees up behind my work. I don't really appreciate it, but that's okay, because wrestling's really good, and I like wrestling, and I'm trying to focus on that.
It's been a week.
It's been a week in wrestling.
So yeah, we're going to cover all the stuff that you want us to talk about. NXT getting their first win on Wednesday night, the controversy with Cornette. We're going to cover it all.
I will say, Effie put out like this amazing promo on Twitter today. I don't know if you saw it. I think I retweeted it. But he was just like, you know what? I'm just going to declare your only holiday that you have to celebrate is Effie Day. And you know what you're going to do? Nothing if you want. Just take time for yourself. Do whatever the fuck you want. It's Effie Day. And like, just fuck Christmas, basically. And I was like, I love you. Can I just do that? Can that just be a thing?
Is Christmas going to randomly be the new heel? Like, is that where it's heading? But yeah, I mean, you know, people should do what they want to do. If you don't want to celebrate something, don't celebrate it. My holiday that I hate Valentine's Day.
Because it's the worst.
But it's not like a sort of like, oh, if I'm single, I hate it. I hate it all the way around. It's like, even if you're with someone, so what, your friends are supposed to feel shitty because they don't have another half at that point? Like, who came up with that stupid holiday? Like,
I've been married for almost a decade and I don't celebrate Valentine's Day. I refuse.
Yeah, that one's my Christmas, I guess. That's my, or as in like Christmas is your one. That's my one. Do you like Thanksgiving? Is Thanksgiving equally as egregious? Is that better or worse?
I mean, I work pretty much every Thanksgiving, so like, it's fine. Thanksgiving, I don't have like, Thanksgiving's never quite as stressful, right? Because you don't have to like arrange all of the gatherings and get the perfect presents for everyone and do all the stuff. Like, if I'm not working on Thanksgiving, then I just go somewhere and eat food. It's a lot less stressful. So I don't hate Thanksgiving. It's fine.
Well, so there's loads of wrestling news to talk about. We should kick off actually with a story that's kind of been developing with Kelly Klein, the Women of Honor champion, the ROH Women's Champion. She apparently on Tuesday was let go. Now, Joe Koff had said that they let her know that she would not, her contract would not be getting renewed. But her husband, BJ Whitmer, he had put a status out on Tuesday saying that ROH had emailed her to let her know that she was no longer going to be kept on, or that she was being let go. She's apparently still got a concussion from a match, so she's injured. Now, she had been quite vocal, I think, in the Joey Mercury situation, where Joey Mercury had been kind of very unhappy about the way that ROH day-to-day operations were running. I also saw something else, which I don't think is related to this, but just because we're talking Ring of Honor, I know that Greg somebody who's the general manager of ROH, but he had like a tweet exchange came out with like a guy from the Bullet Club. I can't remember his name, but he was coming over and the guy basically went, "What a waste of money," in a text exchange. You're the general manager of Ring of Honor, like, shouldn't you just be like not saying that? Anyway, so there's a whole lot of stuff going on, but I'm not really familiar with Kelly Klein. Are you, and what do you make of the situation?
I mean, I think I've seen Kelly Klein on like one show. Like, I'm trying to remember if I don't think I've actually seen her live ever, because she's been contracted with Ring of Honor. So I think I've seen like a match of hers when I watched something from Ring of Honor at some point. But like, I know of her. Like, I know a lot of people have spoken highly of her. I know that she is very, very good at what she does. She's just not someone that I've seen a bunch of matches from, but what I have seen, I've really enjoyed. And she's obviously their champion right now, right? So she's been prominent in Ring of Honor, I suppose. Like, I do not follow Ring of Honor, so cards on the table. Like, I don't have a whole lot of knowledge about the situation. But All of the mumblings online and all that sort of thing, they seem very much positive in support of Kelly Klein, and very much like a lot of people who are more familiar with Ring of Honor and more familiar with that product say it is ridiculous that she's being let go. She's incredible. She's one of the bright spots in Ring of Honor right now, and the company is going to be far worse off without her. Now, I know that she, I think it was last month or so when Joey Mercury was kind of on his Twitter tirade and all that kind of stuff. I know that he was mentioning Kelly Klein and mentioning how she had spoken out against Ring of Honor for kind of mishandling her concussion situation. Like they still booked her travel to South Africa or something, and they weren't treating her properly for her concussion. And so she had to go to another doctor, like seek outside counsel essentially to get treated. And I think that was part of the email in which she was fired, was saying that she had like breached confidentiality by showing, company specific documents to other counsel or something like that, which is ridiculous, right? Like if you have a concussion and the company's not taking it seriously and the doctors aren't treating you and you like are going to seek medical attention so that your brain, isn't further damaged, then it's not a good look for Ring of Honor to be like, oh, and now you're fired because you did this, because we didn't take your concussion seriously. That's how the whole thing comes across.
It does. And I mean, obviously, we don't know the full story, but what I mean, why would she make it up? I mean, if they don't want to extend her contract, I just feel like in 2019, especially when talent are so vocal at the moment, that it's just probably not the best idea to tell someone they're let go while they're still injured, and
And
they're
via
your
email.
and via email while they're your women's champion. So it's a weird story, but there's been a couple of stories now about Ring of Honor that have come out, which makes you kind of think that, is there's no smoke without fire. There's a couple of stories out, so I guess we'll keep an eye on it and see what it is.
I mean, it's just not a good look for Ring of Honor, and it really doesn't like a lot of I don't know anyone who's really been following Ring of Honor anymore for the past few years. And I mean, I know that they've been very important to like building the culture of independent wrestling. They're not an independent wrestling company anymore. They're owned by Sinclair. They're owned by a $1 billion corporation. Like they're not independent wrestling at this point, but they've been important in the wrestling landscape in the past. But it seems like a lot of the management and stuff that's in place right now is just not great. And I haven't heard good things from people who've worked there, and it's just not good.
And they had the show last, well, earlier on this year at Madison Square Garden, but it just seems to be, doesn't seem to be the same as it was before. Now, before we talk about the Cornette thing, let's talk about NWA Power as an episode. I had a ton of fun watching this episode. I watched the edited version, so I'm assuming the only thing I missed is the 5 seconds that we will talk about in a minute, but we had the Nick Aldis Trevor Murdoch match that was fun. We had the Question Mark, who is one of my new favorites.
Love him.
He is.
Love him so much.
I said to Steve Gunn, I said, the way that the way Question Mark looks is how I felt when I returned from my holiday to New York. I felt like I put on so much weight that I just had a gut. But I didn't carry it off with anywhere near the panache that the Question Mark did. So he was kind of there. I mean, and then obviously we had the tag match with Allison Kay and Ashley Vox against Thunder Rosa and Marty Bell, and we had Melina getting involved. And then the main event, we obviously had the Colt Cabana and Ricky Starks tag match against Adam Stevens and Question Mark set up earlier in the show. I thought it was a really fun episode, and there was tons of good stuff. And they offer something different in an era where there's so much stuff that you kind of want to watch it because it is just so different to everything else.
It's different and it's easy, Like it's not something that you have to watch, and I'm not sitting there like constantly in my head analyzing the booking and going, ooh, who's getting a push this week or anything like that. It's just a really fun wrestling program, right? And I love the old school aesthetic. I love that they're upping the campiness of it. I love that they're just kind of embracing that and saying, like, this is what's going to make us stand out in the wrestling landscape. Because, yeah, I had a bunch of fun watching NWA Power. I thought Trevor Murdoch versus Nick Aldis was a really cool story because, just the idea that Nick Aldis is taking Trevor Murdoch lightly, and Trevor Murdoch is like, hey, I am going to take it to you. And I thought they had a really good match. And obviously, Nick Aldis got the win, but it really felt like Trevor Murdoch could take it to him, And I love the tag match. I love seeing Ashley Vox get more recognition because she's been one of my favorites for a long time. Like, I really just want to see her go pure Oceania on Marty Be or on, yeah, Marty Bell and, who was she with, Thunder Rosa and Melina? Like, I just want Oceania to get involved, but I know that she can't because that's like her Chikara persona. But it'd just be really fun because she's also like kind of supernatural and creepy and stuff. And then the question mark is just so fun. And that's when I texted you after NWA Power, it was before the controversy erupted and everything kind of like all of the discussion about this episode is now kind of centered around one line and Jim Cornette no longer being with NWA and all that kind of stuff. But one of the things I found fascinating watching the show was hearing Jim Cornette have to commentate for question mark, because question mark was undoubtedly the most over person on the show, right? Like the crowd loved question mark, as well they should. His name is question mark. Like, what is not to love about this, right?
Mm-hmm.
But just like kind of listening to Jim Cornette try to make sense of that, and he sounded genuinely baffled, like that the crowd
he
was
like
so
putting, he was putting
guy.
It over. He was going like, who, what, where, why, what? So you know, they even managed to get a wacky character that somebody like Cornette could identify some stuff with, because you could tell he was still having fun. I've not seen it, but I know that when he was doing MLW commentary, that he had to commentate some Jimmy Havoc matches, and I think he was just like, this is not my jam. Like, he was not into it, but he still seemed into it enough. And you're right, like the dynamics of hearing him commentate Cabana and commentate this weird character were kind of fun to hear.
It was something that, like, it's unfortunate that everything has played out the way that it did, because it would have been really interesting going forward to see if, like, having more comedic wrestlers and more comedic roles going forward would almost soften his stance on some of the things that he's railed against in the past.
Yeah, you know, would it have, there's a lot of things I often wonder that, like, if him and Kenny Omega had been in the same place, and there was a way to, like, have a conversation, would it have blown up as much as that has? So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I almost wonder if that would have happened. But yeah, I mean, to your point as well, I hadn't seen last week's episode of NWA Power, and I think the other good thing is you can dip in and out of it, and it gives.
Yeah, because
good...
I missed last week's episode too. So then, when they were introducing question mark to me, I was like, well, clearly I need to be paying more attention to NWA Power because there is a character called question mark, and I'm super in love with him.
Yeah, but they do a good job of catching you up. So mm-hmm. So that's good too. I think
Aaron Stevens has actually been quite fun on the shows too.
I didn't like him at the beginning, but I have warmed to him. He is better than I originally thought.
It was interesting with their tag team. He was really doing a big callback to when he was Mizdow, right? Because he's like raising his hands and getting booed because nobody in the crowd likes Aaron Stevens. Everybody loves the question mark. So it really just kind of like reminded me of when he was Mizdow and Miz would get booed and Mizdow would get cheered. He's kind of going back to that well, but it's working. Like, that's the kind of character stuff that he's really good at.
Indeed. So let's talk about the controversy. So there was a line on the show for people who are living under a rock. I should probably just read the line, because if you've not seen it, you probably need to hear the line. Hang on, Jim Cornette. I don't have the exact line in front of me. But he said something during the Nick Aldis and
Trevor
Murdoch match. So it was something he has said. I think in the past he said it at Big Bubba Rogers and a few others. So what he had said was... Why can I not find this fucking line? It was something like, Trevor Murdoch's so tough, I could even see him with a bucket of fried chicken strapped to his back driving through Ethiopia or something. Something like that.
Yeah, riding a motor scooter through Ethiopia.
Now, apparently when the show was happening, there wasn't really any... Because you were watching it live, right? Did you pick up on it when he said it?
No, I didn't notice it at all. And I don't necessarily pay that much attention to commentary and like certain lines and stuff like that. Like, it's not one that stuck out to me. I'm not saying that it isn't atrocious, because I think it's atrocious, but it didn't register with me when I was first watching the show. It wasn't until after on Twitter when someone posted the clip, and I think it was the tweet that was like, I think I just watched my last NWA Power show. When everybody started kind of talking about it after the fact. But no, I didn't notice it until after the show was done.
So he made the comment, and then apparently after the NWA Power show had finished, I didn't even hear about any of this till Wednesday when I woke up, because I was oblivious to the entire thing. I hadn't seen anything about it. A lot of people were very unhappy about what he had said. Some people thinking he was racist, some people thinking that he was distasteful, some people thinking he was out of line, and all that kind of stuff. And one of the things that Dave Meltzer had said about it, I think is... One of the things that I've kind of taken away from it the most is that Cornette obviously is so outspoken about today's wrestling, a lot of stuff in it and a lot of people in it. And I think with that, there is a section of people, and I wouldn't put us in that this bracket, I think there's a section of people who were waiting for him to make a fuck up. of some kind, and then they were that was going to be it. So I think he was kind of on borrowed time in 2019 wrestling, because he has been so anti so many things and so many people that I think
a lot of people were very unhappy that NWA hired him in the first place.
Yeah, a lot of people. So I think a lot of people who don't like him or really don't like his stance on a lot of stuff were waiting for him to do something. And he said this comment, it's not a good joke at all. It's a bad joke. It's in poor taste. I don't think he intend. I listened to his podcast today. He said that he meant it as a starvation joke. I think he probably did mean it as a starvation joke. It doesn't mean that it was a good joke.
That he did. I mean, that's still quite in poor taste.
It is, yeah. I mean, you know, it is funny because David Bixenspan had said something where he had talked about if he had said that exact same joke but substituted the food type to something else, he didn't think MD would really be talking about it. And I don't think they would. I think that one thing, rightly or wrongly, really clinches on what this is. And I think there did have to be consequences, 100%. Now, there's people who love Cornette who are going to back him, there's people who hate him who are going to slate him, and there's people like us who are kind of in the middle who are going to try and talk about it in a nuanced way and see where we lie with it. But I think the thing for me is that I don't like the joke at all. It's hard for me because I know the guy. Like, it's difficult for me to... I'm not going to throw him over hot coals. I think that he did need to be held accountable for the joke, 100%. He's resigned, and I think he's resigned because he felt that the show was no longer fun for him to do. And he basically, listen to his podcast if you want to hear what he thinks. It's interesting to listen to it. But for me, it's first of all, I think it's great that people are calling people out on stuff. If you make a comment that's really offensive, if you make a comment that's not cool, I think it's great that people are now sort of holding people accountable to what they say. That's a really great thing about 2019. I hope. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
But do I think that he should be never allowed to broadcast again? No. That's not really where I would lie. But I just feel really sad about it all, because I feel sad that, you know... I think this should have been... One of the things that he had said in his podcast, and I see where he's coming from, is when Lagana had called him to talk about it, and Lagana had said, you know, we're getting all these complaints, but da-da-da-da. And Cornette said, well, what did you think when I said it? Because obviously Lagana edits the show. And Lagana said, well, I didn't really think about it. And then Cornette kind of said, well, when the two producers who were in my ear, they never said anything at the time. The guy who I was commentating with never said anything. He was like, if somebody had taken him aside and said, Jim, that joke is no longer acceptable, this is why, he'd have been like, okay, 100%, sorry, won't do it again. He was like, that's what I would have done. Obviously, that's not what happened, but when I was watching NWA Power, obviously, because I knew we were going to be talking about it, it was after all this stuff had happened, and I just felt really sad watching it, because I think they're so good for each other, NWA Power and Cornette, and now, obviously, I don't think there's really a way back at this point, because he's not going to do what I think the people who are angry at him deem would be a reasonable sort of like apology. Like, he's not going to give those people what they want. And similarly, people are not going to give him a pass for it. So we're now in this weird situation where he's going to go. And yeah, the whole thing just sucks. What do you think?
It does suck. I mean, how I wish this could have played out is, like, ideally there are so many steps that could have avoided the situation leading to his resignation, right? Like, the first step could have been if someone noticed it in editing or in production and did call him out on it. Because, I mean, like I said, I can't necessarily say anything because I didn't notice the joke when I watched it the first time. Does that mean that it's okay? Does that mean it's appropriate? No, but it didn't register to me because it's not something that stuck out to me as a white person watching NWA Power, right? So I think that speaks to the need to have more people of color and more diverse voices in production, like, watching these sorts of things, because... like, if you have just a homogenous group of people controlling everything, then there are certain things that are going to not stick out to you just because it's not on your radar, right? So I think, like, that's step number one. Like, step number two is when people started calling him out on it, I think that if Jim Cornette would have been willing to say, hey, I apologize for this, I understand now, like, even though my intent was not racist, my intent was to make a starvation joke, which, again, still in poor taste, but, like, my intent was not, you know, to be racist here, but it has been pointed out to me that what I said definitely has racist overtones. I understand that. I have learned from this. I apologize. can we move on? That would have been a reasonable response. A reasonable response to me was not, ha ha, heard any good jokes lately? Listen to my podcast to hear me talk about stupid people. Like, that's just doubling down and really kind of digging in your heels and refusing to learn and grow and change, right? Because, like, I think that people should be afforded the chance to grow and change and learn. And, like, everybody fucks up, right? Like, I have fucked up. I've said some shit in the past that is super not acceptable. I think, like, being a human is learning from that and growing and, like, listening to other voices and taking those comments on board. And that's where the whole thing kind of falls down for me, is that Jim Cornette does not seem to be the kind of person who wants to listen and take those comments on board, because he's so, like, he's so stubborn about being right and not being attacked. And I get it. A lot of people come after him, but he's also a purveyor of that. Like, he is someone who watches Kenny Omega fight a blow up doll and is like, nope, Kenny Omega's terrible and I can't stand him and he's ruining wrestling. You know, Jim Cornette and Joey Ryan is a whole nother situation. But, you know, like, there are certain performers that he watches. He'll see one match or one thing will stick out to him and he's like, nope, this is bad. So I think that, he feeds into that kind of culture of, like, antagonistic tendencies, I suppose. Like, I think he does himself no favors. And yeah, I think a lot of people were waiting for him to fuck up, because he's done stuff like that in the past. He's made egregious comments to people online. I mean, he bullies people online and it's really not okay. Like, I like the guy personally. When I met him, he was super nice to me, but there are ways that he speaks to people that I don't appreciate. And I understand why people are, like, more ready to come out with their pitchforks for him than anyone else. And the whole thing just kind of sucks, because I think you're right. Like, I think he was very good at commentary on NWA Power. I think the show will be worse off without him. But I think he is kind of a toxic, polarizing figure. And I understand why people don't want him near their wrestling at this point in 2019.
Yeah, I think that, like I said, I think there's going to be three camps of people. There's going to be the people who are just like, whatever Jim Cornette does, they're going to be like, here's thumbs up, no matter what. I think there's people who, no matter what he does, they're going to hate him. And then there's people in the middle like us who kind of, you know, we talk about it a little bit and talk about the good and the bad and kind of try to come to consensus about it. It sucks. I think that the difficulty is that Twitter is one of the worst places to have a conversation about anything.
Oh, yeah.
It is horrific. There was, like, somebody who had on Twitter had been like, oh, my God, I'm so glad now I can finally watch a Colt Cabana match without supporting that racist homophobe in Jim Cornette. And the thing that frustrates me about stuff like that is, I bet you if I went through your entertainment that you've got people you give passes to, whether you've got a Randy Orton DVD or whatever it is, so, you know, the selective thing's always done my nut in. But I think but what I've learned, and I'm learning, and it's harder for me than for most, is that you just can't really have those conversations on Twitter anymore. Because there's just no point. Because, like, I could have the most reasoned and balanced thing ever, and if you don't agree with me, you're probably just going to continue to just say no. And then eventually it's either you're going to snap at me and I'm going to snap at you. So I think that Cornette kind of treats Twitter as like promo class in some ways, or just promo school. And I don't think he thinks about maybe somebody on the other end who is going through something. But I think if somebody's going through something, they probably shouldn't be chatting to Jim Cornette on Twitter, because Twitter is just bad for people, I think, in a lot of ways. I think to be on Twitter, like, I mean, Seth Rollins should not be on Twitter. But that's sort of different reason.
No, I agree with CM Punk. Seth, stop tweeting.
So Seth should come off Twitter. Twitter's
built to be an echo chamber, though. You know, it's not built for nuanced conversation. It's built to limit characters. It's built to be like sound bites and whatnot. And you can't argue in sound bites, because if you argue in sound bites, then no one's ever going to learn or grow or change. And like, that's part of having human conversations, which is why I like podcasting as a medium, because we can actually have a conversation like this. And I think that's important. But
the other thing is that David McCutcheon had said something, because I DM'd David, right, not long after this, because I was like, you're the only person who I'm like in my friend circle who like is sort of pro Cornette as I am, and not pro Cornette in terms of his views, but in terms of like, I know the guy, I think I get what he's trying to say sometimes when he words it horrifically. I was like, what do you think? And we're going to talk about it on Over to You this weekend. But one of the things he kind of said was, you know, I wish that the people who had the pitchforks for Cornette were out doing something about problems in the real world that really matter. And what he also, when we were talking about it, he was, I mean, in theory, NWA Power should now see a huge spike in viewership because there's all these people who hated the show because Cornette was on it. So now they, I guess, will be watching all the time. I hope that happens. I hope that the thing that comes out of this that's good is that if Cornette's not on it, the people who didn't watch it because he wasn't on it are now going to give it a chance. I don't think that's what's going to happen, but I hope that I'm wrong.
I don't think that's what's going to happen either. And I think that there are also people who were watching it because they support Cornette and they support his views on a lot of things, who might be more tempted to switch off now because, like, boycotting the fact that he was so terribly mistreated. I don't think Cornette was mistreated here. Like, I don't.
No, I don't think he was mistreated at all. I think that there was a bad communication about stuff. You know, David Marquez, who's the interviewer for NW
Power? Yeah.
He had put, I think, his Facebook page basically talking about, you know, he's known Cornette for 25 years and he's not a racist and all this kind of stuff. And I don't really think, I think in a balanced way, I don't think the conversation really is Jim Cornette a racist? I think the conversation is more about he made a racist remark.
And how did he respond to that?
And how did he respond to that remark and that it was offensive in this day and age? But even if, you know, like I say, If you hear the whole conversation, if you listen to his podcast that he did this week that came out today, he says on there, if they had came to me and said, that comment that you made today is not acceptable, here's why. And he was like, and I said, cool, sorry, my bad, no problem. Which to me shows that sort of like intel in his mind is there. It's just that sadly it got so spiraled out of control.
Well, and I think the stubbornness of not being willing to say those things just because he was called out in a more public way kind of shows that, like, there's still a problem there, right? Like, if you're that stubborn and you're going to, like, dig in your heels and double down about all this stuff, then, like, this is the kind of stuff that's going to happen. Like, that's why people see you as toxic.
Like, to play therapist, is it that he feels like apologizing would be him apologizing to the AEW type fans who do not like him? Is that how he sees
it? I'm sure he doesn't want to apologize to the crowds that he disagrees with, who he doesn't think belong in wrestling in the first place.
So, you know, because I think it was like Bischoff about a year ago. I mean, the comment that he made that I had way more of an issue with, because like a bad joke that's offensive, I can kind of, in my own mind, just because I can let it go. It's not, but then the joke is not about me. If you deem it racist and you're an African American or a black person, you've got far more of a right to have that opinion than I do. I can't tell you what is or isn't because I'm a white privileged person. But he said a thing about Justin Roberts the other week where he basically kind of said, you know, you wouldn't want a guy like that around your kids smiling at that. You know, there was an inference. Now, it was just a really poor taste thing to say, and it was about somebody who didn't really deserve it. That to
right,
me
and like
far
I mean
worse.
Justin Roberts has been nothing but lovely to everyone, right? Like implying that he's some sort of pedophile is ridiculous.
Now, so exactly your point. So now I don't think that Cornette was saying Justin Roberts is a pedophile. I think Cornette was again trying to make a bad joke and it didn't land. So it turned into Jim Cornette thinks that Justin Roberts is a pedophile. Meanwhile, I think about 6 months ago, Bischoff had done a podcast where he had basically inferred the exact same thing about Dave Meltzer. And that didn't really get picked up, which I think, again, is about how toxic are you in an environment? You know, like, I mean, because Randy Orton said the N-word on Twitch, and that's kind of just stayed under the radar. It's just not, I mean, we know about it, because obviously it's our job to kind of know all these weird little things that happen. But, like, that's not gained any traction anywhere. You know, no website's picking that up, and he's using that word in 2019. So I think there is an element of it where it's about Cornette had put himself in a position, rightly or wrongly. He's free to say what he thinks about wrestling. Some of it I see where he's come from, some of it I don't. But he's free to say what he wants. But I think the consequence of that for him was going to be people were going to be ready for him to make an error. And he made an error and they jumped on it and now he's gone. And I don't know if there's going to be anything else in wrestling for Cornette because I don't really see anywhere else for him. Anymore?
I mean, this seemed like the most perfect fit for him, honestly. But he doesn't really fit in today's wrestling landscape. And I don't want to sound like him and say, like, you don't belong here. Because I think that there's absolutely, I think what NWA Power has shown, and one of the things I was excited to talk about this episode before everything erupted, was I think NWA Power is doing kind of the perfect blend of old school sensibility and forward thinking. Like, they're actually subverting certain tropes, right? Like with Camille not talking ever, right? Like she's always with Nick Aldis. She doesn't speak. Everyone's like, we want to hear what Camille has to say. We want to hear what Camille has to say. And Nick Aldis is like, okay, Camille, what do you have to say to these people? And she's the one making a choice not to speak to them because she doesn't feel that they deserve it. So like that to me is just a really interesting subversion of the trope of the valet who doesn't speak because she's not allowed to, right? Like they get it. They get what wrestling is in 2019, but can kind of be a throwback. And it's this really perfect blend. And I think it was probably the most perfect place that Cornette was ever going to fit in if there was any potential for him to fit in wrestling. But I think because he's been so antagonistic towards so many people and towards so many people that are very popular in wrestling and trying to like move wrestling forward, it just, I don't know. I think this was kind of inevitable.
Yeah, I think it was gonna happen given where things were going. So, but like I say, if you dislike him, then you're going to be happy. If you like him, I'd recommend listening to his podcast today. And if you're like us, then let's just support NWA Power and still give it some time. And you know, I don't think that you should stop watching it because one guy's not on commentary. But at the same time, their job now is to find someone good. That you know, if they need to find someone who's going to connect that show. And I hope that they do. I don't know who they find. I don't know who you're going to... Is it a Matt Stryker? I don't know who they're going to get. But there's some big shoes to fill. So I hope they fill them.
I hope they do too. Because, I mean, the show has been so much fun to watch. And I haven't caught every single week. But it's one of the shows that I want to tune into. And right now, like, I mean, the holidays are rough for me, right? Like, my depression gets very, very bad and it makes me not really want to do anything at all. And it makes me not want to watch wrestling sometimes because it's like, this is a thing that I'm supposed to enjoy and I'm not enjoying it all the time. Like, Cards on the Table, that's just kind of how things are in the winter for me. And NWA Power has still managed to kind of like be fun and make me tune into something, even though like, watching wrestling reminds me of work a lot of the time. It's been one of the programs that's just a really fun, easy watch. So I hope people support it. I hope people check it out. If you have been not tuning into NWA Power because of Jim Cornette and you don't want to watch something that he's featured on, like check out the show because it's great. And if you don't, and if it's not like something that you can make time for in your viewing, like there's so much stuff out there to watch. It's just, I don't know. I hope that NWA Power continues because I think they're doing really good stuff.
What did you think of CM Punk on WWE Backstage, his debut performance?
It was nice to see him back. And it was nice to hear him sound like he was enjoying himself. Like, I don't know that he said anything super revolutionary, but he felt very much like him. He felt like he was very in his own skin talking about stuff. And it was kind of nice. Like, I've missed him. And I didn't realize how much I missed him until I actually got to like hear him talk and, you know, talk about the product and whatnot. I mean, it was just fun. It was kind of refreshing. I don't know that I'm going to watch it every single week, but I was interested in what he had to say. I loved his promo on Tom Arnold. I thought that was brilliant. That was just a lot of fun at the end of the show. But yeah, I thought it was cool. I don't know. What did you think?
Yeah, so I thought he was great. I thought he was the same guy in terms of his opinions and his ethos on wrestling. I think he remained that guy, and you know, his banter with Renee was really good. I'm glad he's not on every week because I will make a point of checking out whenever he's on because I really like hearing what he's got to say. So the fact that he's only like
I'm gonna try or at least watch the clips.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, the fact that he's not going to be on every week for us is great.
Like, if it yeah, because there's so much to watch.
Yeah, if it only means like once a month we need to watch, then perfect. That's easy for us. But you know, I think he, so, and apparently with the ratings, it went from 100,000 viewers to 180. So people were interested in hearing him talk. And you know, in some ways, it's like, it's kind of the most rock and roll thing ever to just come back and be able to just talk shit about the place that did that to you.
I love the fact that he was like, I mean, I can't be fired or dropped out on TV for anything I say here because I don't work for WWE. I work for Fox. So whatever.
So good. So good. So we should talk about the big news story, which is that on Wednesday, week 8, AEW suffering their first defeat. It's going to be NXT got the win. NXT had 916,000 viewers to AEW's 893,000 viewers. So on Raw, they had kind of said, you know, Triple H said at the end of the show, like, open invitation, anybody who wanted to come. So they had kind of bigged up that we were going to see loads of stars. I guess from watching the two shows, Did you feel like this was the week that NXT was going to get it and was a deserved win, do you think, in the reigns?
I mean, yes, I did, because people who watch Raw and SmackDown were going to tune in to see Raw and SmackDown stars. So I thought that this was the best chance that NXT had to win the ratings. And NXT this week is tough for me because I think that there was a lot of good stuff on the show. Like, I have a whole lot of feelings about seeing Becky Lynch come back in. We can talk about her in a second. But overall, when I got done with NXT, even though there was some really great stuff on it and I enjoyed a lot of it, like that tag match was incredible. Not the Viking Raiders and the Forgotten Sons. I was making a bagel while that match was happening. But like, and parts of it were fun enough, the parts that I saw. But like the Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish versus the Revival match was so good. And there were so many awesome things on it. And I came away from that episode just being like, I don't know if I even enjoyed it this week because there was just so much brawling for no reason. And I don't understand, like, tuning in to see the Raw and SmackDown stars. Like, I didn't tune in to see people in red and blue t-shirts just brawl, like, what, 3 or 4 times throughout the episode? For why? Like, I don't understand what's going on. There was, like, a cool moment when Kairi Sane faced off with Io Shirai. But, like, why was Cesaro there in a baseball hat? I don't understand.
Well, the thing that was kind of, to me, was one of the most kind of evident things on Wednesday watching NXT is that NXT has always been the show that, like, is very coherent and very structured, and it gives you all the layers that you need. And, you know, usually by the time they get to like a go-home show for a takeover, you know everything that's going to happen and you're essentially just in like recap mode to get where you were. But like on this show, we found out that like the three-way that was going to be on this week's show with Damian Priest, Pete Dunne and Killian Dane is now going to be on TakeOver, and the winner is going to get a match in Survivor Series. We still don't
know. Which, did that feel like kind of an afterthought to you? Because that should be the biggest deal in the world that the NXT Championship is going to be defended on Survivor Series.
It got 1 minute worth of time. 1 minute worth of time. For the first time ever on a main roster pay-per-view, the NXT Championship is going to be decided. That should have been a sit-down interview with Adam Cole. That should have been like, you know, there should have been so much with that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, for Survivor Series, we don't know who the team NXT are for the men or the women going into the weekend.
The only NXT stars that we know are going to be on Survivor Series are Adam Cole, right? Because he's going to be defending against whoever. And any one of those choices, I think, could be great. Pete Dunne, please. That would be ideal. Because, yes, please, I would very much like to see that. I kind of get the feeling it's going to be Damian Priest, but, like, I don't know. And any one of them I'd be totally fine with. We know that Shayna Baszler's going to be on there because she's embroiled in this feud with Becky and Bayley. So we know that. Who else?
And we know the rest of the Undisputed Era because they're in the tag title three-way in the US IC North American three-way. But that's it.
Okay.
That's the only people we know. So, and I'm not even saying it. My point is more just like with NXT, you're so used to just like, you know everything that's going on. This felt kind of last minute written. And that's not what you kind of get with NXT. And also, the thing that struck me was that, you remember like Triple H had said in an interview, it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Uh-huh.
Like, so many people were saying this online. Wednesday was a sprint.
Oh, yeah, like, 100%. I mean, this was very much about, like, let's throw a whole bunch of things at the wall and get people to tune in, and we'll see if it sticks. Because the last time that they had, when it was AJ and the OC, I guess they're all just called the OC, I don't know, AJ and the club, when they were on, they came close to beating AEW, right? Like, it was really, really close that week. But then last week they didn't retain that viewership because people didn't tune in to see who was going to show up.
Yeah, I think it was like I'll get the numbers, but yeah, it was very close that 1 week. It was like 882, and it wasn't far off. And then last week it was a big disparity in the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I'm about to geek out with numbers here, so tune out, anybody who doesn't like this. So I was so fascinated by this week to see what the number was going to be, because we had Raw, which had 2.2 million viewers or whatever, who were finding out that NXT was going to have main roster talent, right? So you're thinking that maybe like 300,000 people, 300,000 people, 400,000 people might tune in to see what's going to happen, right? You would think that was that's what's going to happen. They literally only had an increase of like, so they had 963,000 viewers. They didn't even hit the amount of viewers they had that first week. before AEW came around. Maybe they got like 1,100 or something like that the first week the NXT was on, like September 18th. They didn't even hit that. So like,
when that shows that there's a crossover audience.
It does, but it also shows that like, I'm thinking if you know that the big names are going to be there and you have like Becky Lynch on Twitter and stuff and you have Seth Rollins, I was expecting them to crack a million for that. And the fact that they didn't and they only won by 16,000 viewers, that to me is a big story. That's a big story that like, I don't know if I'd be doing a cartwheel if I was WWE. Like, you threw everything at the wall and you only won by 16,000 viewers and you still lost the 18 to 49 demographic. Like, that's concerning, because what that's saying is that the big guns, you're sort of saying, you know, if all things go to shit, we can bring these people in. It didn't really make that big of a dent. Like, you won, but you didn't win. I thought they were going to win, like, by a decent margin. You know, a couple hundred thousand viewers. And I don't know what it felt like for you, but I mean, I know, well, Becky Lynch is probably the exception because she really did feel like a homecoming and whatever. But the rest of them all just kind of felt like guys and girls.
Yeah, I mean, seeing the revival there was cool and everything, but Becky Lynch was definitely the big one. And I think she had put on her social media, like, just pictures of Full Sail indicating that she was there before the episode aired. So, I mean, that's a pretty important marketing push, right? Becky Lynch is one of the biggest stars in your company. And if she's going to be on the show, then you'd think that people should tune in. Like, I don't know. It's interesting to me too, because like, one of the things that I don't hear talked about a lot is that NXT is available on the network the next day, whereas AEW isn't, right? Like, I can't watch AEW on demand. And had a very difficult time finding a way to watch AEW yesterday because some of my normal means were not functioning very properly that I can't complain about because, like, I'm not paying for them. But, like, for me, I'm a lot more likely, if I'm home on a Wednesday night, which is rare, but I'm a lot more likely to watch AEW first just because I can watch that live and then I can, you know, I know that by Thursday night I can tune into NXT, and a lot of times I don't watch it until the next day anyway. So if I'm going to be watching both of them on replay, like, I'll just watch NXT because it's like good quality and it's on the network and it's reliable and that kind of thing. So I think that is probably part of the discussion, is that NXT does air the next night. I mean, I think a lot of people are watching both shows. I think a lot of people are just tuning into AEW first for reason.
I know that Andre on Facebook had sent this, and I'll post it actually on the Facebook community and on my Twitter later on today. But there's like a tracker of where everybody was watching the whole time, like through both shows.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, it's a really, really cool graphic. And the thing, like, the Becky one was, like, the biggest hitter for NXT, like, by far. It was, like, over...
Which is not surprising, and that segment was awesome.
Over a million viewers, they were, like, you know, up for it. But really, after that, the only time where the show, where NXT's graph even got anywhere near to going back to that was after AEW went off the air at 10 o'clock when everybody... Because I think if you're watching live... Now, when I'm watching live, I'm watching both on a split screen and kind of trying to toggle both, which ends up mean that I need to watch both again the next day, which is really not suitable, but it is what it is. I think if you were sitting in on a Wednesday night and you're just kind of channel hopping, I would be like, okay, so I'm going to obviously watch the last 10 minutes of AEW to see what the main event is and see what the result is, because I know that when that's done, I can just switch over to NXT and I still have 10 minutes of the overrun, so I'm not going to miss the end of the main event.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and I think I just pulled up the numbers here. So I've got the numbers for like all 8 of the weeks. And it's like WWE have gained 166,000 viewers more this week than they had last week with the big Raw and SmackDown people. What do they do next week? Like, because the thing that is becoming clear is that AEW is kind of steady in the same ballpark for the most part. There's a couple of weeks where they went below, but I would guess 900,000 is kind of where they're going to be for the most part. And they're just kind of doing their own thing. And I feel like what's going to happen, and you're going to hate this, is it feels like it's only a matter of time before WWE just kind of go, we just need to change what NXT is, because they think they have to throw everything at the wall to try and win a rating.
They're already changing what NXT is. NXT doesn't feel like NXT anymore, not last night or Wednesday night, whenever it was. Like, that did not feel like an NXT show to me. It felt... sort of like NXT, but it felt like way too much main roster stuff. And I think this whole build to War Games and Survivor Series has felt way more main roster than I like, because it feels so haphazard. And because, like, they're not even building to Survivor Series on NXT, right? Like, they had so many Raw and SmackDown people appear on NXT, but, like, to no end. It wasn't like they were appearing because they're going to be involved and, like, fighting against the people that are on NXT, and it was a big brawl and that kind of stuff. But, like, we still don't know who's going to be there from NXT representing NXT for Survivor Series. So it didn't really build anything. It was just loud noises and crashes.
If you had told me 6 months ago that Seth Rollins would turn up in NXT and I'd be this, like, about it, I would call
you
crazy.
Boo. I said, boo, Seth Rollins.
No, thank you, sir.
Did not want him there. No, thank you, sir.
But yeah, so again, and it's becoming fascinating. I don't know what else they're going to do. The more they take away what NXT used to be, I mean, I guess now their mindset is, we're a USA Network show, we need to... But then I don't think people need or desire another Raw or SmackDown show. Like, those two are enough, so...
I don't want the two we have.
So I feel like the problem you're going to come into is, if NXT becomes a Raw or SmackDown show, I think it's going to get worse, because you're then going to take away what NXT was. And why? Because a lot of people, to my mind, you know, like you and other people, I think a lot of people watch NXT because it feels different to WWE main roster shows, and it's got its own kind of consistency and its own internal logic and its own storytelling device that is very different to what the main roster is.
Well, that's one of the things that made it sound like a very intriguing concept when they said Survivor Series was going to be Raw versus SmackDown versus NXT, because Raw versus SmackDown just kind of feels like the same old, we've seen it before. Injecting NXT into that is fascinating, because NXT is its own world, right? Like, it really is its own little universe down in Florida, and, like, not just because the ropes and the canvas are a different color, but also because the ropes and the canvas are a different color, and it looks different, and it feels more underground, and it feels more punk, and it always feels more separate. And combining them and having this massive crossover, like, I love a crossover, really looking forward to Crisis on Infinite Earths. Love crossovers, love seeing people interact that you don't always get to see. But the problem is that it's just feeling like it's homogenizing a bit too much, and it's making NXT feel more main roster than making main roster feel more NXT. Like, that initial SmackDown where everyone was stuck in Saudi Arabia and NXT had to invade by necessity was awesome. And that felt like NXT being something new and different and coming in and really changing the game. But unfortunately, we've had weeks since then, and they just kind of keep brawling and keep, I don't know, fighting back and forth or whatever, and being like, brand supremacy. But, like, why? I mean, I don't understand.
Yeah, like I've felt this year more than any year that they've done this, that I'm not engaged with the brand supremacy thing.
Mainly, I just want it to be done.
Well, mainly because, like, everybody got their brand a month ago. Like, why would they really care? To me, and we've talked about this before, the more interesting story was going to be Raw and SmackDown versus NXT.
Yeah, that's the more interesting, if they would ally.
But let's talk about just kind of the big things on both shows. Let's do NXT first. So we open with Becky Lynch coming out and doing a promo. It was a lovely promo at the beginning, where she was kind of reminiscing about, you know, her days in Full Sail, and then obviously Rhea Ripley comes out and the crowd side with Ripley. I mean, I was pretty taken aback by that, were you?
I was fascinated by it. Absolutely fascinated. I think it was the most fascinating thing on the show for me, because Becky Lynch is Becky Lynch, right? She's awesome. She's incredible. She's the man. She's the best. She's, you know, the winner of the main event of WrestleMania. And the crowd loved her when she came out, for sure. And she felt like a big presence coming to Full Sail, like, more than anyone else who's come back, more than even when AJ Styles was there and had never been there before. Like, Becky Lynch coming back to Full Sail felt like an event. And it was really cool, and I got chills from it. And it was really nice to hear people so on side with her. But then when Rhea Ripley came out to confront her, it was fascinating hearing the crowd be like, nope. Becky, you moved on. You went to that other place, and you're not for us anymore. Rhea Ripley is ours. She's the one who represents us. She's more underground. She's an up-and-comer. We are on her side. Like, in the match, the crowd was very clearly in favor of Rhea Ripley instead of Becky Lynch. And I found it an interesting contrast to Undisputed Era versus Revival, because I think that crowd was a lot more split. Like, it was, you know, Undisputed FTR. And I thought it was weird that they were chanting FTR and not Revival, because, like, why? But whatever. That's just a nitpicky point. But, like, it really feels like Becky is main roster now, whereas maybe people still see the dissatisfaction of the Revival and still kind of want to take them under their wing because they feel like they've been done dirty by the main roster. Like, Becky's obviously a big star and she's succeeded and excelled there and is one of their favorites. And so then she is no longer one of Full Sail's favorites. And I found that really, really interesting.
Her reaction to the crowd was, you know, because I don't think she really knew they were going to go kind of as against her as they did in the moment where they kind of had to choose between, you know, Rhea, who is one of their peeps, and Becky, who is now, you know, she's sold out. She's gone to the big time. So it's,
I mean, this is the crowd that sang to her after she lost to Sasha Banks at Unstoppable, right? Like,
and I remember that. Like, yeah. There's not a lot of things that I can go, I remember this thing, but when she was like, I remember sitting there, I was like, yeah, when she lost Sasha Banks and they sang her song, I remember that moment. It was very, very vivid.
Because that was when Becky Lynch kind of came into her own.
Yeah, it was great. So we ended up getting Becky and Rhea. They did a no contest. I was kind of okay with it because I feel like that's a match down the line you can really do big time, so you don't really want to give it away. We obviously got the women getting involved with the horsewomen and... you know, they got involved afterwards. Becky kind of recovered and fought them off. Rhea was helping out as well. So, you know, seeing Rhea and Becky kind of hit their moves on Shafir and Jess Majuk was pretty fun. So, yeah, I thought this was for me maybe the most natural transition of a main roster person to NXT.
Yeah, I would say so. And the no contest didn't bother me because we'd had not as many shenanigans yet in the show. I think I got shenanigans out by the end of the show, definitely. But this one, like, I would like to see Becky versus Rhea down the line. And I like the fact that Rhea can be like, you haven't beaten me. Just like she can say to Shayna Baszler, like, you haven't beaten me, right? Like, that was the big build to that. So, yeah, I don't know. I really liked all of this. Like, the opening to NXT, I just thought was phenomenal. And seeing Becky Lynch versus Rhea Ripley is one of those, you know, meetings of people that you don't expect to see together. And that felt like a really cool face-off that you wouldn't get to see. So, like, that felt like a Survivor Series season gift, whereas a lot of the stuff just is starting to feel tired.
I did love the very brief Matt Riddle Ricochet match, even if I don't really understand how Ricochet was able to get into Full Sail and create his own match when he's on Raw, but fine, you know, I guess. Does not make sense.
And maybe he's, you know, he's pals with Regal-ish.
Sure, let's make the stretch. Obviously, the Undisputed Era and the Revival was such an excellent tag team match. If you've not seen it, it goes almost 20 minutes. It is fantastic. The Revival looked like the Revival of old for the first time in a long time. And
they felt like the Revival again, and it was so refreshing.
So, you know, if you've not watched NXT, I would urge you just to, you know, at the very least check this out because the crowd are super into it. They're, you know, tag team wrestling chants. Kyle O'Reilly continues to maybe be the best wrestler in NXT.
He's incredible.
He's so good. I didn't even know he had diabetes, do you know this?
Yeah.
Like, mad that he's able to just, like, be as great as he is. So, and then the main event, obviously, was Adam Cole and Dominik Dijakovic for Advantage. In the War Games match, Adam Cole got the win. The thing that I was kind of thinking about with all these shenanigans, because the shenanigans after the Matt Riddle Ricochet match, the shenanigans at the end, when we watched Retro Raw, right, or Retro SmackDown, Retro ITR, whatever the fuck we're calling it now, Retro ITR, right, and a lot of times when the chaos happens, the reason that it works for me in the story is because most of the time when they do those big brawls or those big shenanigans-y things, all the characters are in feuds with each other. And that's why those people are out there doing the thing they're doing at that point in time.
And we know their alignments and they're clear and we know why people are on side with one another.
Exactly, which is why those things always tend to work for me. This almost like proved it to me because there was all these brawls and all these people getting involved and all this chaos that like, I kind of was watching it going, I wish I felt this was more fun. Because, you know, you've got Seth Rollins coming out, you've got Ciampa there, you've got Drew McIntyre, you've got all these people. And it just, none of it really mattered because why are these people fighting for brand supremacy? Like, we all know you're paid by the same company and you're all getting, like, there's not been enough in the story to tell me why brand supremacy is important or why, you know, somebody needs to win. If the last 10 spots in the Royal Rumble were up for grabs for the winning brand, I all of a sudden get why you're fighting. But there's nothing on the line and it just felt very, meh.
And like I could even see it if NXT came out and said, like, hey, we are the ignored brand, right? Like people don't pay as much attention to us. We don't get to be, you know, on the main stage nearly as often, whatever, whatever. Like make something up, right? Like make it feel like it felt on that first SmackDown when NXT invaded and they were like, hey, we're here, you're gonna notice us. Like we want people to tune into our show on Wednesday night. But they're not even really telling that story. They're just like, we're gonna be fighting because it's Survivor Series. And that's it. And okay, great. Like NXT versus main roster is an interesting feud. Like that I can see for brand supremacy. I just don't think they're telling the story very well at all. And I mean, like, that's what I mean about this episode. Like, there was so much good stuff. Like, I loved seeing the Revival feel like the Revival again because it was a pure clinic in tag team wrestling, which I love. Like, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, when we had American Alpha versus the Revival or when we had Revival versus DIY, they actually did that spot that they did in their match of the year in 2016, right? And I got all these like nostalgia flashbacks of Revival matches of old and how things used to be and how brilliant it was. And all of the like Raw and SmackDown people showing up for no reason and brawling in different colored t-shirts just kind of like took the wind out of my sails in terms of being excited about any of this because I don't understand why I would want my brand to reign supreme when, like you said, the draft wasn't that long ago. So I don't know why anyone would be like super loyal to Raw over SmackDown or SmackDown over Raw. I get why people would be loyal to NXT because it's different, but it all just feels like a clusterfuck.
And that's the week that they won. That's the week that they
And
won.
like, and it's all like heels and baby faces just fighting alongside each other when they're supposed to be in feuds. And I don't know. I'm not a big fan.
On Wednesday, Ollie was like, who's fighting where? Who's fighting what? He couldn't get it. Meanwhile, over on AEW, we had the Nick Jackson Rey Fenix match to open the
Oh, the
show.
other thing I wanted to say about
Okay.
NXT, real quick.
Sure.
I thought Adam Cole versus Dominik Dijakovic was very good as a ladder match. They had some cool spots, but I think it was hard for me to get invested in it because we just saw that kick-ass ladder match between Io Shirai and Mia Yim,
That one
and
was much better.
it felt like that light. You know what I mean? Like I think having two ladder matches back to back was a poor choice on their part.
It's like going from getting a quarter pounder with cheese and fries to having a salad. Like a nice salad, but just wasn't as good as a quarter pounder with fries. Just so everyone knows, I thought Mia Yim and Io Shirai was the quarter pounder with fries.
Of course.
I thought the Nick Jackson Phoenix match was fun. I think it's the first singles match Nick Jackson had in like 1,800 days or something like that. I said before the Bucks kind of style of match is not my favorite thing, but I was able to enjoy it here. I thought they worked well together. Rey Fénix gets the win. Rey Fénix is great, and he rejects Nick Jackson's handshake after the match. I thought it was a good opener to the show. I don't think it was as sort of, you know, huge in box office as the way NXT opened with Becky, but at the same time, I kind of in some weird way respect that they weren't trying to respond. They were just trying to do their own show, and I thought the opening match was fun.
It was really fun. I thought it was great. I mean, obviously they're both great wrestlers. Rey Fénix is incredible. He's like one of the best in the world, obviously. And Nick Jackson's also very, very good. It is kind of indicative though, right? AEW seems to be staying the course and doing their own program and not being super reactive, where it seems like WWE is being nothing but reactive to AEW. And I think that kind of puts a lot of power in AEW's hands. Like even if you look at the way the Wednesday Night War started, AEW was like, hey, we're going to have a TV show on Wednesday night. And then NXT was like, well, we're going to totally also be on TV then because we're better and we're totally going to win. And then they didn't win. And then they're like, well, we're going to have everyone from the main roster show up on our show. And we're going to have AJ Styles and then we're totally going to win. And they didn't win. And then now they're like, fuck it. We're going to throw everyone from the main roster on the show and we're going to win. And they did, but not by very much. And AEW is just kind of sitting there going, okay, cool. Like you won a week, but whatever. We're still going to just continue producing a good program. Whereas WWE and NXT kind of feel like the whiny ones being like, no, pay attention to us.
They do. They do.
Doesn't it?
Yep, they don't. You know, you're right. It's staying that course is really important.
And I think that like if NXT were just like producing a good quality program consistently, then I would be enjoying it a lot more. But like all of this kind of reactionary measures in the past couple of weeks have kind of soured me on it a little bit, and it's a bummer.
It's weird in some ways that like some of the hotshot stuff they used to do in the Monday Night Wars didn't. It felt hotshotty, but like part of a story. Like, whereas, like, this feels more like hotshotty, but not really the story to back it up. And I think if you're going to do hotshots, you need the story. Very, very quickly, I just want to say I really just couldn't get into Britt Baker and Hikaru Shida, sorry, could not say that to save my life. I think the reason is because I don't think Britt Baker is a great wrestler, and I think that one of the problems that AEW is running into is that they have these Japanese women who are very good at their style of pro wrestling, and they've done it for so long, and they're coming in and facing American-based performers who are not really skilled enough to be able to pick something like that up straight away, and I think it's showing in the lack of sort of chemistry that we're seeing.
Yeah, it's tough because I really like Hikaru Shida. Like, I'm starting to really be on side with her. It has taken me a few weeks to kind of like figure out what she's all about, just because I wasn't familiar with her as a performer before. So I was like significantly more interested in her in the match than I was in Britt Baker. And I think that's kind of a problem because they keep talking about how Britt Baker is the number one ranked contender, right? Like, she's the number one person, and she probably isn't anymore because Shida got the win. But Britt Baker seems like someone that they brought in and she was going to be kind of their golden child. And like, it didn't quite pan out because, I mean, she is good. I think she is good at wrestling. I don't think she's putting on technical classics at this point. And she's maybe just not hitting at that like main event level that they wanted her to hit at. And that's fine. Like, you don't have to be a main event talent right away. Like, you can grow and change and whatnot. But I think that because they put her in such a high position, like right out the bat, then it's kind of done Britt Baker a disservice, and it's made me less interested in her, which sucks because I want to be into her. I want to like her. She seems like a lovely person. It's just nothing about her story is really that compelling to me right now, and I hope that that changes. Like, I'm wondering if this loss is going to like lead to her needing a comeback or something like that. It's almost similar to how I feel about Adam Page being in the main event scene.
I love when something happens that kind of proves me wrong, and the Dark Order commercial is exactly what that would be if you looked it up in the dictionary. This was excellent. Like, this is what they needed to be. They needed to be weird people who try and they're cult and they try and get people. Like, this is what Bray Wyatt never did. He was a cult leader who never wanted ending his gang.
Well, he would like kidnap people every once in a while, or like he recruited Daniel Bryan, but that didn't pan out.
Yeah, and then he just stopped recruiting forever.
Well, and then he like got rid of Luke Harper and Eric Rowan, and then got them back because reasons? This was amazing. I loved this. I loved this recruitment video. I love that it looked like the personification of stock footage. I love that there were like clone people, and that all of the like happy smiley white people were just like cloned and wearing collared shirts, and it looked so Stepford and so creepy and amazing, and I love it, and I am so on side with the Dark Order now. Like, this is exactly what I wanted. When they tried to recruit Marco Stunt last week, I said I want them to try to fuck with people. I want them to try to recruit everyone to break up tag teams and like gain supremacy in AEW, and that seems to be exactly where they're going. So I guess maybe like I would have liked to have this kind of vignette a little earlier on, but
they shouldn't
it's
have
okay.
They shouldn't have debuted them as a half-baked gimmick that wasn't fully finished. Like, it should, and hopefully they learn from that. That like the reason, you know, if people start liking the Dark Order now, it's because we've been given a reason to. You know, like don't debut them till you've got the whole thing down.
Because now we know that they have a purpose. They want people to join them, right? Like, they want to take over. So I think that's fascinating, and I love it. Like, this is, they really seemed like they were just missing one little piece, and this is it. And I thought the video was so well produced and so brilliant and just perfect. Like, it was very Firefly Funhouse in a way, right? Where it was like so happy and smiley and super dark as fuck because they're talking about like giving up your individual autonomy.
Yeah, exactly. So just a couple more things. I thought the Dynamite Dozen Battle Royal was pretty fun. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was fine. It was a battle royal.
It was MJF and Hangman Page are the two that are going to go on next week in the final. We got a Jericho promo. This was on the fight version, but there's a bit where he walks through the back and like berates people in the way. It's tremendous.
I did see parts of that. Like, so my computer was not like very happy about letting me watch the show, so it was very like glitchy and jittery. So I only caught about half of what he was saying to people, but I got the implication that he was berating them.
He was. So he comes out, he does a promo, he has to say sorry for what he did last week with the tantrum. He basically gets Hager to do sorry for him. So he says every word but sorry, and then Hager has to go and say sorry.
It reminded me of Fonzie. Made me laugh.
Which apparently Meltzer said that's where he got the idea.
That was taken straight from Happy Days.
Yeah, I mean, I'd never seen that episode, but
it's a consistent thing with Fonzie's character. Great. He can never say sorry or that he was wrong.
Great.
He'll be like, I was
It's a great thing to take. It's a great thing to take. If you're going to take
anything,
I'm a
huge Happy Days fan, so it
take
made
something
me smile.
From Fonzie. SCU came out, and it basically ends up that SCU ends up getting goaded into a world title match because Jericho wants to give him a title match because he thinks he can beat him one on one. Sky is saying this is his big chance. Also, Jericho made an announcement that next week is going to be his thank you from executives and the higher ups for what he's done for AEW so far. We then end up getting a big brawl that involved like a stare off between Luchasaurus and Jake Hager. I did not know I wanted that in my life, but now I do.
Yeah, I want that super badly. Like, give it to me, please. I'm super into that idea. Oh, by the way, did you see, I forget who posted, if it was Foodie Grayson maybe, but like the Luchasaurus like nature documentary video?
Oh, it's so good. So, so good. What did you make of the Jericho promo though, and the kind of coming out of it having Sky against Jericho next week?
I mean, it was the logical step to have Sky versus Jericho for the title, right? Like, I couldn't really figure out whether this was Scorpio Sky being super underhanded and, like, goading Jericho into making him have a title match, or whether he really didn't want a title match yet, or whether he really wanted to prepare for it. Because SCU are kind of slimy sometimes, right? Like, they might want more time to prepare. But, yeah, it was good. It was fine. It wasn't, like, the best Jericho promo we've seen recently, but everything seems kind of logical and like it makes sense. And I like the fact that Jericho is obviously very affected by taking a loss to Scorpio Sky. And I like that Scorpio Sky came out full of confidence and said, I pinned you, you know, like that is why you're so upset. And I think that's good. Like, if you're going to build Scorpio Sky as a big deal, which you should, because he's one of your world tag team champions, he should be out there. He should be confident. Like, even though he doesn't necessarily feel like he's on Jericho's level in singles competition, that's the story, right? Is that he pinned him in a tag team match. And Jericho even said, you're a tag team specialist. You pinned me in a tag team match. Like, you can't pin me one on one. And that's, you know, that's storytelling. That's wrestling.
I also want to give a shout out to the main event. Darby Allin and Jon Moxley, I really enjoyed. Darby Allin's entrance was really fun. Darby Allin's like one of those people who I feel like he could get people who don't watch wrestling to maybe check out some stuff.
Like, oh, for sure. He came out in a body bag crowd surfing. That was so awesome. Has he done that before?
I've not seen it. Maybe he's done it somewhere
usually
else.
Like, he carries a body bag with him, but I don't remember him ever like crowd surfing in a body bag and then coming out of the body bag with a skateboard. This was great. Also, I love his theme tune. Also, I love his makeup. Also, I love everything about Darby Allin, and I'm a big old fan of his.
And I thought this match with Moxley was really good. And we kind of, at the end of the show, have Moxley kind of saying he's top of the food chain. So we're kind of, where's he going to go next? So good end to the show. I thought personally that, I think it was 2 weeks ago, I thought that NXT beat AEW. Last week, I thought it was so-so. But I thought this week AEW beat NXT, personally, in terms of the show, just in terms of what the show was trying to accomplish. Because next week, they've set up, you know, Pac and Omega, Sky and Jericho, MJF Page, like they've set stuff up, and it felt more like stuff was happening for a reason more than the other show. Which it's weird because if you look at it, the NXT show should have been for me shenanigans, big names, brawls, like that's stuff that I really like, but it just didn't connect for me.
See, and it's weird because like on NXT, there are things about NXT that I enjoyed more. Like, I was more into Becky Lynch versus Rhea Ripley than I was into any of the matches on AEW. Like, maybe other than the main event. Like, I was super into the Revival versus the Undisputed Era because that was so good. And that's exactly what I want to see, right? Like, I'm more invested in those characters than I am in Nick Jackson versus Rey Fénix, just based on who I've watched for years and years and years, right? So there were certain parts of NXT that I enjoyed more, but overall, I felt like AEW did a better job of building things and being coherent and being consistent, whereas NXT felt like, you know, some really great moments that I loved with just like a bunch of paint thrown against the wall and splatter and getting all messy all over the place.
So that is it for us. We will be back.
Oh, can I just like real quick? I don't know. Did you watch any of AEW Dark?
I did not. What should I watch?
I thought the women's tag was great, and like you should watch it because Dustin's on commentary and does very good job, like a very good job. I enjoyed him on commentary quite a lot, so like even checking out part of the show just to hear his commentary I think would be worth it. But I really enjoyed the women's tag quite a bit. It was Big Swole and Chris Statlander versus people. Who were they against? They were against two. It was Rio and someone.
I'll look it up right now. AEW Dark. Okay.
I think it was it Rio and Britt Baker, maybe?
It was, yeah, Rio and Britt Baker against Big Swole and Chris Statlander.
Okay, it was so awesome to see Chris Statlander get such a, like, I don't know, just such a spotlight on her. She's been wrestling for 3 years. She's incredible. She's one of the best around. And it was very cool to hear commentary talk about her. Like, everyone was very complimentary of Chris Statlander. And Big Swole is great, too. Like, I'm a huge fan of hers. So it's weird because I'm tuning in, obviously, to see not the AEW stars. Like, I like Rio. I like ish Britt Baker. But I just wanted to kind of give a shout out to Big Swole and Chris Statlander for doing an awesome job. And even though Chris Statlander did not get the win in the match, like, she really brought it. And I think that things are going to be looking up for her because I think she just had such a good showing. And it was just really nice to hear commentary put her over so much. She's one of my faves.
I do want to check out that show. I do want to check out the Undesirable to Undeniable series as well. So
also really, really good.
I will do my best to check it out. But we're going to be back on Sunday on Patreon for our Overrun, where we'll be doing Yellow Ropes Forever, bringing it back from the dead for the takeover review from War Games. So we'll be doing that. And there's also a five-page, I'm just doing one plug now, for Patreon, there's a five-page Bret Hart interview up there, which is brilliant. It talks about the Bulldog, AEW, women's wrestling, and tons of other stuff, so it is well worth checking out, patreon.com/insidetheropes. What are the other plugs, Sandra?
Okay, you can follow me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW, follow Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985, follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, as Kenny just said. Go to youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for tons of interview content. There's a bunch of stuff up from StarCast and clips from the Bret Hart tour and clips from other tours and all sorts of great video content over at youtube.com/InsideTheRopes. And go to insidetheropes.co.uk/tickets to get tickets to live event tours that I can't go to because I don't live in the UK. And if you live in the UK, you should go because they're awesome. And there are tickets on sale for Mick Foley in December and Kenny Omega in April. And are the tickets for JR on sale currently?
They go on sale on Monday at 8 p.m.
Okay. But yeah, there's a JR tour happening too, which is pretty great. And that's going to be happening. Yeah, tickets are on sale Monday. So check all of that out. And I think that's all the plugs. Did I get them all?
That is all the plugs. So to play us out, we will play...
Should we play Darby Allin's theme because it's so good?
Yeah, let's play Darby Allin's theme. It's very good. Okay, here is Darby Allin's theme. We hope you've enjoyed the podcast. We will be back next week with more. And there's loads of stuff up on Patreon if you can't get enough of us. We appreciate you, everybody. Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.